Recipe for Success. Commentary for the October 4th, 2025 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 3 and 7 through 8. After 4 centuries of captivity in Egypt, the period of the patriarchs had passed. Self-effacing and unprovocative, they had striven to live at peace with the Hittites and others who occupied the land of Canaan before the Egyptian captivity. When they immigrated to Egypt, they did so as humble foreigners seeking a peaceful existence where there was enough food and pasture for them and their flocks to survive during a time of famine. Because Joseph had obtained a position of influence in Egypt, Pharaoh welcomed them with open arms as the relatives of a favored advisor. However, with the passage of time, old friendships were forgotten, and new political realities led to bondage for the Israelites. Humble patriarchal leaders could no longer rely on the good graces of those who held power in Egypt. It was time for a new type of leader, a warrior prophet, unafraid to speak truth to power. Moses understood things had changed, and in his 40s, he tried to forge a new model. Slaying an Egyptian taskmaster seemed the logical first step, but it led only to him fleeing into exile in Midian, where he married into the family of a priest, Jethro. For 4 more decades, he learned from his father-in-law lessons he could not learn in Pharaoh's court. He learned there is a power greater than the sword. So without a sword, he returned to Egypt, and with authority that only God could give, he demanded the freedom of the Israelites. He had become a new creature. He was not the warrior trained to battle in the Egyptian barracks he once was. His weapons were the words God gave him, and miraculous revelations a divine power that arose when he spoke those words of confrontation to Pharaoh. The new creature he had become was a prophet of God, giving utterance to the truths God would have him speak. It is important to understand what a prophet is. It is not a perfect person. Moses failed in that and lost the opportunity to enter Canaan with the rest of the Israelites. The Bible tells us that all are sinners. We all fail at times, according to Romans 3, verse 23, and 1 John 1, verse 8. This means that Moses' failure that kept him from entering Canaan did not negate his prophetic calling. God's grace covers these flaws when we acknowledge our failings and appeal to his compassion based on his willingness to forgive our shortcomings. The Apostle Paul expressed it like this: "Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 9. See also Exodus 33, verse 19. The point is that the grace of God is what makes a prophet. One cannot decide to be a prophet and run about claiming to be such. It is God who calls, God who creates, and God who enables the prophet with miraculous displays of endorsement. Elijah did not create the Mount Carmel experience, though God found him and created in him the prophetic character that became a conduit allowing God to speak to humanity. Moses did not choose to become a prophet. Instead, when confronted by God at the burning bush, he tried various arguments to not become God's prophetic voice. but God enables whom he will to fulfill the calling, despite their weaknesses and flaws. For the magnificent work God intended, only a prophet would do. There would eventually be places for priests and kings, but something greater was needed for the transition from slavery to the conquest of Canaan. Even though Moses could not carry his prophetic calling through to completion, a prophet still needed to lead the people and be God's voice to them as they moved forward into that promised land. The metaphorical prophetic mantle then fell to Joshua, just as Elijah's fell to Elisha. This was no nepotism of priests and kings. It was God calling whom he chose and enabling them for the role without regard to bloodlines or kinship. Joshua was not of Moses' lineage, nor was Elisha of Elijah's. These prophets arose out of nowhere to inspire and lead the people while speaking truth to power and being the guardians of justice for the Israelite host. Though Jesus prophesied, no prophet was in the lineage of the Messiah. Nonetheless, their words and their martyrdoms presaged the bold and salvific ministry of Christ. A prophet is someone who, absent from messianic genealogies, does not, in that sense, exist, yet nonetheless does, and power shudders before that miracle. And in a world where almost all strive for power, wealth, and control, those who eschew all of that are walking miracles, enigmas of grace, compassion, and deliverance, though, like Christ, the type to their antitype, their blood watered the ground. That blood is cried out indicting power and demanding justice as Abel's blood cried out to God after Cain slew him. The people, driven by fear, run aimlessly back and forth, blown by the winds of strife. They are like sheep without a shepherd, cowering as a storm rages around them, trembling for fear of the lightning and thunder. But the prophet calls to the sheep, and the voice they recognize, for it speaks with the soothing words of the one who can calm storms and deliver his flock to safety. The prophet has evidently walked with Jesus, and the sheep feel secure. Joshua, Moses' successor, had that aura of prophetic character that revealed he also was one who walked with God. He closely attended Moses in his ministrations, counsels, and judgments, taking on the wisdom of Moses that would eventually allow him to step in to the prophetic office and lead the people into Canaan and conquest. Joshua did not become this prophetic leader overnight or on a whim. He was one of the 12 spies who entered Canaan and brought back a good report of what God had prepared for them. He and Caleb stood against the other 10, who were filled with fear and refused to go up and possess the land. Even though their spirit of courage and faith in God was the right path, the others wanted to stone them for speaking against the majority. Sometimes all a prophet can do when the people ignore prophetic counsel is to stand aside and let the people, even though they are wrong-headed, approach God, or in this case, reproach God and blame him for their fear and failure. In this case, they brought upon themselves 4 more decades of wandering in the wilderness until all but Caleb and Joshua had died, and they could enter Canaan and take possession. For his faithfulness, Joshua, as a warrior prophet, led the people into battle to drive out the inhabitants. Today we look at all that bloodshed and balk at the idea of so much death and destruction for a religious war of conquest. But that is not what was ever intended by God. Had the people been faithful when the spies came back, all the fighting would have been unnecessary. God's plan was to drive the inhabitants of the land out with hornets, not warfare, according to Exodus 23, verses 27 through 29. It was because of the hardness of the people's hearts, driven by fear, without faith in God to overcome those fears, that so many had to die in battle. Fears are just as powerful today. Those fears cause people to look to a strong leader they feel can overcome whatever fears exist. Innately, We understand the shepherding role of the prophet, but our fears reveal we are not used to being shepherded. This may be because those who should have fulfilled that role in our past failed us and betrayed us to the storm with no rock to cling to. In such desperate circumstances, we can feel nothing but fear like the disciples felt in a storm-tossed boat on Galilee. But when we cry out to God, the waters miraculously calm, and we are grateful for the peace, even though he rebukes us for our lack of faith. The prophetic period from Moses to the Judges is a reminder that God does not abandon us so much as we abandon him. Even so, he remains close. Whenever we pray to him, we discover how near he is, according to Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 7. When we fail to take advantage of that closeness, it is as though we purchased a cell phone and left it in the box it came in, never initializing it for service. Instead, we either write letters to those we wish to communicate with or go see them. When we do, our friends who extensively use cell phones wonder why we did not just call. It is the same with prayer. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find a written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find other articles, as well as links to books written by the author. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.